Welcome to Under the Microscope, a stage for materials and nanoscientists and materials and nanoscience. My name is Pranavi and I am your host. Make sure you're hitting the follow and subscribe button wherever you're listening to this podcast. This means a lot to us and it's absolutely free for you. Once again, I'm Pranavi, your host. Enjoy today's episode. Today we have with us Narayanan TN, who is a group leader, leading a group called Materials and Interface Engineering at the Tata Institute of Fundamental Research in Hyderabad in India. And I have visited his lab when he was not there and his teammate showed me around. And I have to say the lab is super amazing, super cool. So if you have a chance, ever, if you are in Hyderabad or in India, make sure you go to Hyderabad and you visit the TIFR labs, especially TNN's lab. Welcome, TNN.
Thank you very much.
How are you, TNN? Very happy to have you here.
Yeah, I'm doing good, and thank you for inviting me to this particular platform. And I was following these things. They're very nice to be here, and also I was following some of your previous meetings and recordings, and you did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Anyway, thank you for introducing our lab.
Thank you very much. And it's my pleasure. Let's get started. So you're leading the group that is called Materials and Interface Engineering. Please explain your research to us in super simple words. Like, what exactly does it mean? What, tell me.
Yeah. As the group name suggests, it's all about interfaces. Interface means it can be two different surfaces. So it can be a solid interface. It can be a solid liquid interface. It can be liquid or solid gas. So various types of. Mm-hmm. And this interface is a very complicated system, you know. But nobody knows what exactly happening at the interface. But if you try to understand the interface more about, and you can actually solve many, many problems that exist in current devices and reactions. These are yielding two different products, let's say catalysis, for example. And so our study basically aims to solve some of such issues by understanding these interfaces more closely. So as the famous scientist Wolfgang Pauli mentioned, bulk is God's creation, and the surface is basically made by this. But our question is like, can you make this living creation much more attractive, much more engineerable, much more controllable by human beings? So for that, it's not an easy task because, as I mentioned, the interface, so the surface is not stable, it's always not constant, it's dynamic, and it can be very different from what you see in the bulk.
Mm-hmm.
So these interfaces, various special interfaces, as I mentioned, so I am interested in solid and solid liquid interfaces, mm-hmm. particularly any for applications like in transistors, the solid interface becoming important, mm-hmm. and in electrochemical reactions with the catalysis, mm-hmm. for example, like in hydrogen generation, a simple water splitting, just putting two electrodes and splitting water H2O into H2 and O2.
Mm-hmm.
The entire world is actually looking for this reaction to be energy efficient, still not successful. So mm-hmm. it's a really way of synthesizing hydrogen. So mm-hmm. we are also looking into that. What is not known still now is that how can you make this reaction so energy efficient?
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, you don't have a better interface knowledge to make this reaction more energy efficient. So how study aims to understand such interfaces and making such reactions energy efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So we are using various tools to study these interfaces. So this is all about our, in general, level our research.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds okay. I have so many questions. That's a, okay, one by one. So you mentioned you're doing solid interfaces and solid liquid interfaces. I want to understand, like, what kind of materials, like, what kind of scales are we looking at? Like, right now I have this coffee cup with coffee inside. So it's the solid and inside is the liquid. But I'm guessing that this is not the interface that you mean when you say you work on interfaces, right?
So that's a very important question. What kind of scale we are talking about, right? So the interface, so it can be water on this kind of talk what I have shown right now, but the interface what we are talking about is at the junction where the liquid is in contact with that solid, and this is spanning around a few amps, tens or nanometer. So it's around that 10 raised to minus 9 meter, 10 raised to 9 meters lower than 1 meter. So it's in that order we are talking about. So it's not, so what you all see is all bulk, but what I'm talking is the very near to the place where the liquid is in contact with the solid. So it can be a metal water contact, it can be a metal contact, can be a metal silicate contact. But a lot interesting is, well, all these contact, this junction is of the order of few nanometer or few amps. So this is what we are interested in. So we want to know what exactly happening at this junction.
Right. And you also mentioned transistors, right?
Yes.
That means our electronics.
Yes.
Any sort of electronic. We are recording on a laptop right now. I'm recording on a laptop. I have my phone. So
Yeah.
tell me a bit more, like, what exactly, let's take a
Yeah.
deep dive there. Like, what exactly do you mean there? Because I want to understand the direct implications of your work that you do in the lab, or your team does in the lab, into the, I want to visualize that, the connection between the lab work and the reality or applications.
Yes. So the electronic devices means it contains lots of transistors and these ICs, integrated circuits, etc. And in one IC, you may have several transistors. And most of the transistors now are made of silicon-based transistors.
Correct.
And as we are bringing our gap get smaller, smaller and smaller, there are several issues with the existing silicon-based technology. So as I say now, so you know that, the big machines are becoming now smaller and smaller, and we really want to go bring down the sizes of our gadgets. For example, like how coming to the palm that kind of system, still the full storage capacity and the speed as it is in a full speed laptop, or even smaller than. So if you are bringing down such gadgets to a really smaller scale, the question is, like, the existing solution is like silicon, whether it is good enough for that. And the answer is that it is not, because there are several issues with the silicon-based technologies when you bring down the size to certain lower than certain nanometer.
All right.
Stability of the silicon is huge, temperature is another issue, several issues. Now the question is, there is one way to address is that finding another material for that. And there are several proposals for such. One of the examples is that actually thin layers. That's what I'm talking about. Thin layers is for one atom thick layers. In one atom thick layers, graphite has many layers, several layers. But if I peel out the one single layer of graphite, it's graphene. So I'm talking about in that dimension, it's called the one layer, one monolayer. So graphene may not be the right layer, but there are several other candidates like the transition metal light charcoal anodes. They are also available in nature, and if you can really bring down them into a monolayer unit, that is possible, that we do in our lab. And then these semiconductors are found to be, they are interesting materials as a replacement materials for silicon, because of various reasons, and because we are cutting, so already the dimension is of monolayer unit, you don't need to bring down a stress table. And anyways, have very interesting electrons, have very interesting properties. So because of all of these things, they are kind of considered as one of the possible replacement material for silicon. But now the composting comes, so in silico transistors, yes, they didn't end up being swampy. But for giving current and taking current, injecting current and drawing back the current in the electronic device, you need a metal for that. So how to make a good metal semiconductor for that? Metal semiconductor for that is a problem in everywhere. Because if you don't have a proper contact, I mean, what I mean by proper contact, it's not a physical contact. They have electronically some kind of mismatch happen. If not that happen, you will actually generate lots of heat while you are running the machine. So lots of heat dissipation. Energy will be just gone as heat.
Right.
And you know the heating effect of your laptop, what will happen, you know that, right?
Right.
And at the same time, it's not an energy efficient process. So how to make this heat as less as possible? It's all can be done by the contact engineer. So one of the research what we are looking is, how can we make this contact very efficient and almost like, you know, there is no thermal dissipation or almost negligible thermal. So this is one of the very, very hot areas of research. Globally, people are chasing. And we could come up with certain solutions for these kinds of interfaces of to address that problem. He's a pilotable in CMOS, because existing CMOS-based technology, large-scale transistor technology, needs a, you know, easy method for such integration. Right. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if I say very complicated method, it cannot be really scalable. So we could find some kind of methods which are actually scalable and at the same time easy to implement. So this is what I talk about interface engineering or contact engineering in electronics.
Right. And this is just one of the field that has implications, right? This is just one of the application field. This is really cool. So this, like, especially now with NVIDIA and AMD, mainly NVIDIA, like doing the supercomputing chips and blah, 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 all of that, we definitely need way smaller chips which are energy efficient, basically, who are not heating up. So we don't have to drill into the oceans to host the servers and stuff.
Wow, that is
interesting. That is super interesting. So basically, wherever there is an interface, which is everywhere around us, you or your research will come in, be it electronic industry, be it the battery industries, basically any and everywhere. Oh, wow. This is really cool. I hope you will talk about all of these things more in detail when you're taking over the Rio Sciences or Twitter account for an entire week. This will be really, really interesting. Also for me, and I have a background in materials and nanoscience, but this is like a completely new field for me. Tell me about your journey to be leading a group now, which has so many important applications and implications. Being a group leader at TIFR in Hyderabad, how did that happen? Tell me about your career journey. I'm really curious.
Yeah. So I started my research as a physicist. And all my training during my master's and PhD was as a physicist. What I mean by that, I was looking into the problems like how the electron transfer among two grains of metal. And you have a small separation of, let's say, polymer for insulating layering, how the electron transfer, and can you really control the electron transfer, etc. So this was the model. And then I moved more into magnetism, where I was looking into, can you create magnetic needles or magnetic wires or magnetic tubes in a very controllable fashion? Because these needles, tubes, etc. were interesting. For magnetic storage application.
Mm-hmm.
Working on how can you align these magnetic needles or tubes, and how can you controllably synthesize them. And then once you synthesize them in a very controllable fashion, how is their interaction? Well, these are all important when we are proposing such magnetic chromagnetic, so-called iron, cobalt, or nickel-based magnetic nano needles. That means that their diameter is of their roughly nanometer, and these are real-life pipes, but at the same time, the length is of your top several micrometer. So these are the two chants that I was synthesizing during my PhD. It was Delhi British University, and part of that was the Delhi Synod Choir. So then, after my PhD, I was doing my postdoctoral research at Rice University, USA. Then I completely shifted my fundamental research to application-oriented research, mostly on different materials, nanomaterials. That time, graphene was emerging as a material and new material. And at the same time, my laboratory is also pioneered in carbon nanotubes, because my professor Ajay was a pioneer in the field of carbon nanotubes discovery. Yeah. And so, along with the carbon nanotubes, he's also kind of pioneer in the field of boron nitride. So, another academic thing, they are very interesting material. And so, I was working on all these materials when I was with him at Rice University. And mostly on applications. Like, the question was that you had several nano materials, like nano wires, nano sheets, and you can synthesize them in bulk. By that time, we have the know how to make them in large scale and the chemical rotors. Well, the question is like, yes, you have created several nano powders of that, and you connect them together in a very nice fashion, or a very controllable fashion. So that it's like, you know, in a Go game, right? Place them in exactly known places where we want, so that we can create beautiful structures and for beautiful applications. And so, I mean, this is fundamentally challenging. If I can pull nanotubes and connect these two nanotubes together. And so we could find some methods. Examining the first method, what we did is that we could weld, let's say, two nanotubes together jointly, joined with the covalent, small beautiful chemistry. Just during the synthesis, we use certain elements like the nitrogen, phosphorus, etc. And you could see that the welding of two nanotubes.
These are two carbon nanotubes that you're welding at a nanoscale. So not like our what you see with your eye, probably with under an electron microscope or even a transmission electron microscope.
Right. So one thing you have to see this real welding, you need to look through the electron microscope. But you can see the after effect, because the nanotubes, otherwise, if you are not looking through a microscope, it will be appeared as a black powder, right?
Yeah.
Now, but after this welding, you know, all the nanotubes will be connected together, so you get a sponge that you can handle. I mean, basically, you can just take it and you can squeeze it, and nothing will happen. You know, it will actually come back with sort of, you know. And so, this was a kind of fundamentally very interesting, and also it was a very cool approach to scale up and a tool for applications.
Right.
At the same time, I'll tell you an incident. At the same time, the Mexican oil spill happened. And one of the questions that can we develop some materials which can absorb oil selectively from water? At the same time, we can collect the oil back.
Yeah,
and this one of those spawns what we discovered found to be, you know, it's actually absorb oil very selectively from water, and you can squeeze the oil back and you can get that the oil, or you can actually burn the oil and you can reuse the nanospawns. And absorption capacity was enormous compared to then use the polymer based beds. So people were using polymer based beds to absorb oil selectively from sea. But these spongy nanotubes were actually absorbing much larger than what is polymer bed used to absorb. And so, you know, it was an immediate application. And so you can see that the fundamental question was led to a very nice, interesting application, and actually kind of started a company.
Wait, did you say you started a company?
Yes, so we, with my colleague in US, we started it, and you know, my colleague is actually running that, because something called the nanosponge solutions.
You can't just like mention it briefly and move on. This is important. Come on. This is not like, yeah, we also, this is a big deal. Okay. So you started with studying physics, then you did your PhD, and then you did a postdoc. And this was around the time when you were doing your postdoc at the Rice University in the US, around the oil spill, Mexican oil spill. Yeah. This is, oh my God, I could do like another podcast episode just about this. I need to get you more often on Under the Microscope. I have to say that. Then you started a company with your colleague. Okay, I'm all caught up. Please continue. Yes.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's okay. Scientifically, that's just one thing. But I was more interested and curious in the fundamental aspects. And in similar lines, doing more on application-oriented work. And another very interesting work, and even I think BBC worked into this too, is that we have several ways of purifying water. Right? Now, one of the ways what we found is that the salinization filtration method, it's a very age-old purification method. And it is one of the best solutions in the planet for purifying water. At that age, but right now, because of several contaminants of lead, mercury, as well as heavy metals, in the current days, recent days, is not an efficient method.
Right.
So what we found is that we actually could find a method to coat this sand granules, individual sand granules, with another nanomaterial. It's a very simple nanomaterial called graphite oxide. And then you develop a method which can actually conformally coat individual sand grains with this graphite oxide.
Uh-huh.
And what we showed is that such a sand pack, a modified sand pack, can actually absorb all sort of organic dyes, metal ions, etc., very efficiently. And at the same time, it also addresses one of the problems with the existing membrane based reverse osmosis, etc. The waste store process. But there's an advantage of sand-based filtration because it's a very fast process. Now, the water fluence rate is so high. So we could keep the fluence rate as high as in the sand-based filtration, but the filtration is so efficient that even organic dyes, heavy metal ions, all of these things can be removed by treating with the sand.
And you sold the idea to another company. I mean, I'm waiting.
This was special, and so this was part of a funded project, so we couldn't go in that direction in this particular project. But again, this is again a fundamentally interesting problem that is actually led to a very technologically relevant.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so this was still, you were a postdoc at the Rice University.
In 2014, moved to EIFR at Institute of Fundamental Research. Before that, in 2013, I moved back to India and I joined Central Electrochemical Research Institute, Kalaikudi, this is called Tamil Nadu. It's a national lab that actually is dedicated to electrochemistry research. It's one of the very unique places in India where a dedicated set of electrochemists are working towards various aspects of electrochemical processes, from corrosion to batteries, and very interesting place.
Okay.
And I was there as a scientist for a year and a half. Then I was mostly looking into so-called developed nanomaterials like graphene and doped graphene, etc. Like gallium nitride for their catalytic applications. Because why they? Because we found that some of the reactions, they can be a very, very efficient catalyst than in terms of long-term sustainability than the commercialized metal-based reactions. For example, like a platinum, palladium, all these commercialized benchmark catalysts. If you compare with them, some of these nanomaterials are found to be better. And our initial studies showed that this can be actually better replacement for metal-based. So this was the electrochemical as well that initiated from the Central Electrochemical Research Institute. And before I moved to Tata Research,
okay.
Before.
That is wow. Oh my god. Okay, okay. I need a moment to wrap my head around all the amazing things you have done, and I already see that the next question I'm gonna ask you, you're gonna hate me for it. But before we get to that, so in 2023, you were 2013, you were at this National Lab for Electrochemical Research in Tamil Nadu, which is in the south of India, in case people are not aware of the map of India. Okay, so there you did doped graphene. So you were always in this space of, like, of course, nanomaterials, but, you know, 2D materials and nanoscale and angstrom scale, all of that. And then in 2014 is when you joined TIFR. You moved from Tamil Nadu to Hyderabad. To join the TIFR in Hyderabad to set up your own lab then, which is the lab that you're leading right now, which is about interface and materials, materials and interface engineering. And I totally see why there is the engineering in the title, because you're doing interfaces, you're doing materials, and you're doing engineering. Okay, so this was like, what, 9 years ago, almost 10 years ago now, as we are 10th year, and you're leading a group and have filled your labs with amazing students, amazing toys, I like to call them, which are the machines that you need to for doing the research. Okay, perfect. That's so what is next for you, Tien? And now I'm curious, like, from the career journey perspective, now you've done it all, you've seen it all, you've done it all. I feel like you have already peaked. What's next?
I never feel like that, because, you know, when I'm trying to know more about the problems what I'm dealing with, I always feel like I haven't completely understood. Anything about them. It's not a philosophical statement, but actually I really meant that. Particularly, as I mentioned, this interface, that's the main key theme I'm dealing with in my lab. It's really complicated. And since it is dynamic, it's like a blind person is explaining everything. That's the way they used to say, you know, we test upon certain parts and then test, really test, and this is that. And so this is what actually what people are doing right now. So to know it more briefly, it's always a difficulty. So without knowing to a certain extent, we cannot do anything with that.
Right.
So that is where I am. So my students, and at least, you know, small problems, they are trying to understand this interface certain way. And only one vision that, you know, can we make the science more beneficial to the human being, to make our life more. That's the kind of philosophy I'm carrying. So I really want to work on more on that and fundamentally understand more and learn things and get training from various places. And this is actually my motto. So it's not true that, you know, I'm in my peak and I don't say that.
Now you're being too kind and you're being too humble, I would say. That is, I totally understand and also relate to the fact that the more you know, the more you realize how much you don't know. It's that. If I may, please add communicating your science to wider and wider audience as well, please, because I think this is very important, especially to the society, right? Because that is something that is very important. And you're already doing a fantastic job featuring all under the microscope now and telling us all about your research and your career journey. This is really cool. So as I mentioned, Tienen, one of my next question that I'm going to ask you, you're going to hate me for it, but if I make you pick one research project that you're super proud of, could you pick one research project and explain it to us in simple words in the section we call In Other Words? Please don't hate me.
It's again a problem of interface. And recently we were looking into interfaces of aqueous, that means water-based system, versus SOA. So, and where this is important, as I was coining, in a simple water splitting to form hydrogen, it is still not an energy-efficient process. So the chemistry is well-known from years ago. The problem is that it's still not efficient. So the interface there is too complicated. And we were trying to understand the interface more closely in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And one way of understanding is that change the interface. That is one way to understand it, right? What is the influence of changing the interface in this particular reaction?
All right.
So the reaction all I'm talking about is converting H2O to H2MO2. Okay. And people are doing this commercially, electrolyzers are there. And we are looking forward more and more electrolyzers in India and also in globally to make more and more hydrogen, because hydrogen is very, very important. We all are using hydrogen. I and you are using hydrogen almost like if I calculate it, 9 kilogram of hydrogen per person per year. And it's a huge amount. Without knowing that we are using 9 kilogram of hydrogen per person per year. And this all hydrogen is, most of the hydrogen is for fertilizer industry and then steel industries or several other industries. So when I want to use hydrogen as a fuel, particularly vehicles, fuel cells, etc., then this 9 kilogram is going to be even higher in the coming years, because this is one of the very potential fuel for the replacement of petrol and diesel in the coming generation.
Right. Right.
So my research was, what is the role of interface, and is there a water structure playing a role in this hydrogen generation? So this was one of the fundamental questions I was asking in the last 5 years. And what I understood is that, yes, these playing a role. And the water structure very near to the electrode. I mean, the electrode means the surface where you are applying potential. For the reaction is very near to the electrode. That is few astral or few nanometer width. This is what I'm talking about interface. In the electrolyte, the water structure, the way two water molecules are connected is far different from what is there in the bulk of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Because the water, as all of us know, H2O having two hydrogen ions, it can actually bond with other water molecules.
Correct.
So if you take just a water in a sampler, it's a really different types of water-water interaction can be seen. So different types of water molecules can be seen. And how do I know that there are different types of water molecules? You need to know spectroscopy. Some kind of spectroscopy. You can do visible spectroscopy. You can do the chromatic spectroscopy. You can do other spectroscopy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if I do a bulk, and if I do at the very near to the interface that I'm talking about, it's far different. And it changes, particularly the structure at the interface changes as we apply or still vary the potential.
Correct.
And our studies show that if you can make the water structure arrangement in a very special way, so-called hydrogen bond free water, or less hydrogen bonded water, it is easy to split that water into hydrogen. Now, this was not a really known concept. And now, if that is the case, how do I really make this less hydrogen bonded water system? And we found that certain materials can actually do a hydrogen bond making, or certain energies can actually break the hydrogen.
Correct. Okay.
And this can actually either enhance the hydrogen generation or suppress the hydrogen generation.
Okay.
Enhancing the hydrogen generation is important in hydrogen production. Suppressing hydrogen generation is also important in certain other catalytic. So if you ask me to pick one of the concepts, what I have recently flourished, or means recently understood much than some of the other labs in the similar area, I'd say this is one of the concepts, and we are trying to establish this concept more and more, and understanding it more and more by different way of probing the industry.
Okay. This would be important, of course. So the water splitting, which the the status quo, the current state is basically that this process is not energy efficient, and what you're trying to do is work on finding a solution to make it more energy efficient, because even today, and especially, it's only going to grow in the carbon footprint or hydrogen footprint, in this case, so to say, of each of the person, like all of us, is gonna just go up. So we need to make these reactions or these mechanisms more and more efficient. It's just like the semiconductor industry, right? With silicon, yes, we have sort of stagnated. There is only a certain level that you can go to, but beyond that, it's not energy efficient, basically. So yes, this is, and this will be important not just for will this only be important in the fuel cells, or like hydrogen fuel cells, or everywhere?
Well, it's not just on hydrogen fuel cells, because you know this is just about water, which was I was using, and right, this is true with any other electrolytes also. It is also important in certain batteries. It is right, also important, you know, in other reactions, like, you know, CO2 reduction process. So various other reactions and other electron transfer processes. Understanding the role of electrolyte.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, people might think that, yeah, what else, what research are you doing with H2O, with water? I mean, there's nothing. You can make ice and you can drink water and you can refine water. Yeah, what else can water do? But there is a lot more that can be done. This is a very interesting, and of course, it can be extrapolated, or a version of it, a modification of this can be used for other liquids or electrolytes or whatsoever. This is really cool. So TNN, it's very clear to me that you are really passionate about the research. You're passionate about science. But what else do you like about being a scientist? I mean, research is, of course, that's a given. But other than research itself, what else do you like about being a scientist?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the very good benefits of being a scientist is that, you know, you can interact without any borders, and you can travel to different places that in sometimes it's not that easy to happen. And more importantly, you know, you can actually try to exchange and learn, study more cultures. And, you know, the science, what is happening in science is mostly the concepts that is borrowed from different other disciplines. So these neurophysics concepts are borrowed from biology or other disciplines, culture, art. All these things are important. You can see in the history of science, scientific evolution, all these things play a role. So in our scientific advancement also, understanding different cultures, different concepts and different things are very important. The only way it happens is that interacting with others, traveling and communicating with others. And I think, you know, I'm joining a lot of with all these things, and this is one of the advantages I ever, I won't get to if I was in another ship. So that's one of the best things I can see as a scientist.
Right, and the freedom and the opportunities, and collaboration, inspiration from different fields. That's really cool. And I mean, it also sounds to me that your research experience has been like amazing. There were no downs or challenges or anything. I hope that is that was the reality as well. But if you had three wishes to improve your research experience, what would you ask for? And I'm not promising anything here, okay? Don't hold me accountable.
No, it was really challenging, challenging in different ways. It was not that easy part, but at the same time, you know, I always still want to, I mean, as a scientist, you need to be as a good student and a master. So you need to continue your learning process, and you can never ever stop. And that training has different parts. It has, of course, those research and from journals and reports and all, and free thinking and reactions are important. And more importantly, you need to have international training. So international training in many fields, and also many times need training in different disciplines and different fields. And I mean, personally, I would say we should take challenges to take fields. It is completely not known to you. You know, you are completely new to the. It's always challenging, but you never have well with much idea on that field that you have to take that challenge, because otherwise you will be in a very safe zone. So the international training is very, very important, and I also would like to take courses in different disciplines and learn things in what is happening in other fields. So these are the things I really want to have in my all over week.
So international trainings, trainings or experience and exposure to different fields other than what you already know. So those two wishes, and what did you have a third wish as well?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, one thing is that that most of the time what happens is that reading books from other fields, you know, it's not happening with reading books and journals, very important. So these, you know, the actions, the international training and books based that of knowledge, mission and assimilation.
Right. I was hoping you were going to say, or rather I was expecting you to say like a fancy new spectrometer, like three new NMRs, because these are your wishes, right?
It happens, right? As we are seeking a mind open and so opportunities, these are all will happen eventually.
Oh my God.
If I count like that, it's not just three. I don't want to count just three. There are four and seven. Of course, we are all looking for state of the art techniques, several in situ, SA2 vaporization tools to understand this is more. But this, what I feel is that this will happen eventually if you're really keen to get those things.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I hope, or I wish many more scientists and group leaders have your optimism and attitude that, it's going to come anyways. I'm going to focus on strengthening my core and my team and the skills and stuff. I have to say, maybe this is like an Indian thing. I don't know, because I would also be like, oh, okay, maybe I would, but yeah. I don't know. I don't want to stereotype, but this is really cool. Now, this has been, I hope all three wishes of yours come true. I mean, the first wish that you mentioned, international exposure or exposure in the different labs around the world, that is going to happen, right? You will be in, you want to tell us about that a bit?
Yeah. So one of the things I was lucky in my career was the experience in Europe, European research culture.
Right.
So I was in Germany 2 years back in one of the Government of India Fellowship. And now I got this AVH Alexander von Humboldt Experience Research Fellowship. So I'm sitting in in the coming months. So I'll be in Germany for the next 3 months. Particularly to work on some of the aspects of catalysis and hydrogen production. So I'm really looking forward
to
that stay and
the research. It's gonna be great. I really hope we get to meet each other in person when you're in Germany. That would be amazing. Kenan, this has been an amazing, amazing conversation. I learned a lot. Before I let you go, I have to ask you about your plans, or rather, what can the followers expect in the week that you're taking over the Real Scientist Nano Twitter account, or X account, or whatever we call it, which is the second part of the podcast. So in addition to featuring on the podcast of Under the Microscope, you also get the keys to the Real Scientist Nano Twitter account, which has more than 3,000 followers, for an entire week. So what can the followers expect in that 1 week? Please tell us. Yeah. Give us a snapshot.
Sure. Yeah. So I will introduce myself and our research initially in a few words, and then followed by I will walk through the lab and where I was seeing all these problems. So one of my students will demonstrate a very short video what they are doing, sometimes in a very funny way, so that the science can be conveyed to even a quickly person who is off from the field. And then I'll also talk about some of the research news, what happened from our lab of research. And this all will happen in the Yeah.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful. Thank you very much. This has been so cool, and I'm really excited to have you on Real Scientist channel. Thank you very
much. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Wonderful. So, everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Make sure that you're following Real Scientist Nano Twitter account. You also follow TNN's work. Please make sure that you are subscribing and following, because that means a lot to us. This podcast is a labor of love, of course, and it is completely free for you to watch and listen to, but it is quite expensive for us to keep making. So your support means a lot. Do subscribe, do follow, do add this to your favorite list, as this is absolutely for free. You don't have to do anything. And thank you very much, and see you in the next episode.